the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-2970. Rick, speaking of birthing, our friends had a baby this weekend. We went to visit them, and there were lots of fantastic conversation with terms like nipple shields. Unfortunate places that need to be stitched. And other good times. Thank goodness we're out of the lunch hour. But yes, I'm taking care of a friend's 2.5-year-old, and this morning I dressed him up in a Cure shirt that says, Boys Don't Cry. Fantastic. All right, there it goes. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's Rick at Rick Emerson. Rick at RickEmerson.com. Just a few, we'll be joined by our good friend Clyde Lewis. Later on, Jim Roop and Peter Carlin from the Oregonian. In about 10 seconds, we'll talk to Lisa Goddard. Let's quickly grab Kevin here. Kevin, you're on the Rick Emerson radio program. What's up, sir?
Oh, not much. I know that you are very into linguistics and people improperly pronouncing or using words wrong, and I just wanted to let you know, this is something that's been driving me crazy,
okay,
is that you keep pronouncing the word T-I-M-B-R-E as timber, but it's actually pronounced timbre.
Oh, like vocally?
And I yell every time I hear you say timber. I go, no!
Do you really yell, or are you spoofing?
No, I really do. Every time you say timber, I go, it's timber!
So is it...
And people around me think I'm crazy.
So the word timber, T-I-M-B-R-E, which is... when I just said timber, but I mean that word, which is the tone or resonance of one's voice, that is pronounced timbre?
Yep.
I had no idea. You learn something every day.
Yeah, I didn't know either. I was a music major for a while, and I learned it in music class.
Fantastic. All right, I will immediately rectify. I will rectify that situation immediately, sir.
Awesome.
All right, thank you. There you go. That's Kevin. All right, 503-733-29. Not running the phone myself is weird. It's like I just say thank you and caller gone. Let's see if it works the other way. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome from the hill with a brain full of dangerous, insightful, and tantalizing thoughts, CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard on the Rick Emerson radio program. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, how you doing, sister? What's up with you?
I feel inadequate with my RE27 mic.
See, here's the thing about the RE27 microphone, and this is, we are now entering one of those sections of the radio program that may interest no one, but I don't care.
I'm just saying you were, boasting about your, what is it, RE50?
I have the RE20. Now, here's the difference between...
I didn't even know anything about this until you mentioned that, and I looked, and it does indeed say RE27 on my mic. That's all I knew.
Here's the thing. Rick Emerson will explain the difference between the RE20 and the RE27, because I don't know a lot in this life, but I am a nerd about certain things, and one of them is this microphone. The Electro Voice RE20, which is the microphone I have, is similar to... but not exactly the same as the RE27, which is what you use. The RE27 can be distinguished by its very shiny exterior. It has mine has more of a dull gunmetal gray. Yours is sort of a shinier silver. The RE27 has a slightly more treble or brighter sound to it, as opposed to mine, which has a little bit more resonance and timbre, one might say. So mine... Yeah, and mine is also distinguished by being the same microphone that Rush Limbaugh uses, which is why I use it. And that's a little fun fact about the Rick Emerson Show.
Wow. Rush Limbaugh influenced you on your microphone purchase choice.
It's absolutely true. I started off using this microphone whenever I could because it's the one that Rush uses. And then over time, it just sort of became the way that I like my voice to sound. So that is why I use the Electro Voice RE20, which is the finest vocal transducer known to man. So there you go. The more, because knowing is half the battle, Lisa Goddard. So there you go.
That is true, G.I. Joe. Came right after He-Man when I was coming up.
Come on! How great is that that you just spotted that? I had no idea. I just said that as like a little shout out to my geek peeps. I had no idea. Your stock has just gone up like 400% with the nerds in the audience because you spotted a G.I. Joe reference. I can hear, I can hear slight palpitations in the thoracic cavities of nerds across Portland right now.
Outstanding. See, I did go to a science high school. So there you go. That's great. That's my code.
I may have already asked this, but were you a mathlete?
We have talked about the mathletes. I was not a mathlete. I don't even think we had mathletes at my high school.
Well, okay.
It's academic.
I know you.
And the academic decathlon. We've talked about this.
I know that you would have been a mathlete had you had the ability to.
I don't know. It was crazy. My high school was crazy competitive about that. I mean, it was, you know, I did well in the SAT, but I was, you know, at the bottom of my class because these kids were ridiculous. The high school. Yeah. Nerds. They were great, fantastic nerds. I love them.
Let's talk about the Hillary Clinton here, just because, A, I look for any opportunity to do it, and, B, because there is a legitimate reason today, and not just my desire to upend the state of American politics by electing a woman so that people have something to complain about for years. She made this speech in Iowa where she said quite reasonably that President Bush ought to adopt a sort of you broke it, you bought it kind of policy, and that if he's going to go in there and just reduce everything in Iraq to 3 inches of rubble, that he ought to either fix it or quit pretending that he's going to fix it, because otherwise, I mean, is it just a given that whoever is elected president and quite possibly whoever succeeds that person is just going to have this debacle in Iraq to deal with? I mean, is it, I don't mean to sound cynical, but is it a given that he's not going to have to clean up this mess?
Well, he said that, I mean, he has said, this is what you mean by, you know, clean up the mess, and he said that he believes that we will still have a presence in Iraq by the time the next president comes into power, and that's what Hillary Clinton was referring to in Iowa, saying that she thinks that is the height of irresponsibility, and that it is this president's responsibility to, in her words, extricate our troops from Iraq. She didn't go all the way and say we've got to withdraw all our troops before the next president takes office, but that seems to be what she's implying when you say extricate our troops from Iraq. But the president himself has said that he expects, in some ways at least, to pass this on, that this will be, but you know, they're tricky. I could see the White House saying, if I were the White House, I guess they could spin it saying, well, what we meant was the war on terror will be an issue, the concerns about Iraq will be an issue, we know Iraq itself will be an issue in some form for the next president, we don't specifically mean we'll have troops there, but really that's what the president said that time.
And I think it was Tony Snow that immediately came out and he said, he denounced that as being some sort of a partisan.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So they're trying to kind of back away from it, but it seemed that certainly that moment, President Bush was honestly saying, yes, I think that this is going to be the situation for a little while. We still have some true presence there. Of course, that was before the election. That was before it was clear how opposed to what's happening in Iraq the American public is. And here's what's interesting. Actually, I had a really bizarre day of escorting some anti-war protesters through the Capitol today. It was mayhem in some parts of the Capitol today. Hundreds of war protesters have been in Washington. They all set up appointments with senators and congressmen all over the Capitol. At one point, a few dozen of them, maybe more, were in a courtyard throwing roses into a fountain, and nine of them got arrested for that, for unlawful assembly, unlawful use of white roses perhaps as well, but unlawful assembly. And I ran into some of them right after that who were just 82-year-old women that they were going to have to walk a mile out of her way because they were locking down some different corridors here because of the protesters being around. So let me tell you, very, very fascinating walking these protesters through the Capitol. It really was a little bit like herding cats, but it was really interesting talking to them, and then afterward talking to the police who were dealing with them, and you really see the divide, that they are really putting the pressure on Congress. They are here today. There are going to be more here tomorrow. Most of them will leave tomorrow, but some of them are planning to stay for the next month to really get in the face of these congressmen. Who knows if it'll make a difference or not? They think it will, but you know, some of these protesters really just, and the Congress is the same way. They convince themselves that whatever they believe, that things are swinging their way, but they're serious. There are a lot of them up here, and they're not fooling around. Of course, didn't help me any when I was escorting them and we were on the underground subway at the Capitol, and they're starting to say, what are they so scared of? What, you know, we could blow up this train if we wanted to. And I'm like, but you know, and they're like, yeah, come on, we could really do some stuff if we wanted to down here. You know, we don't care.
Fantastic.
And, you know, they're getting in the way when the subway doors are closing and kind of stopping them so that everyone could get on and the police were running. It was just, boy.
let me just make this observation, by the way. Big bleeding hearts, though we may be at the Rick Emerson Show. The fact that they're walking through the Capitol and throwing white roses into fountains, that right there, really, if you wanted a microcosm of why nobody takes the active left in this country seriously, there you go, right there. That's it, man. You wanted to boil it down to one emblematic incident. That's it. I mean, the Republicans don't do that. If the Republicans are opposed to something, they wait in an alley and they just kneecap you with something blunt when you walk by. So
it is really ridiculous, the two extremes that we're talking about here. I mean, they're so, it's so extreme. They're so far apart in their beliefs and the way they do things. I mean, it really was kind of a lot of women, many of them wearing hot pink, kind of hugging each other, very happy. You know, they're all about peace, and they're shouting out peace. And it was just so extreme. I ran into a Capitol Police officer that I know a few minutes later, and he said, I think they're crazy. I think those people are crazy.
Fantastic. We're kind of losing your phone here, so...
Oh, no. All right, let me turn up my mic. How's that?
We'll have to...
Oh, no, it's all right.
All right, no, I think it's just the connection. There's a lot of... And we're in a brand new studio today, so the fuzz may be on our
end. Hey, yeah, congratulations.
So. Thank you so much. Well, tomorrow it'll probably go a little more swimmingly, so... in the meantime, it is always a pleasure. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon, Lisa.
Excellent, you too, Richard.
Thank you again, and props again for the G.I. Joe reference. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Lisa Goddard.
Hey, I gotcha.
Lisa Goddard on the Hill, CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard. Fantastic. All right, 503-733-2970. I made that observation just as a little shout-out to my peoples, by the way.
I know, you're in love.
But you have no... She didn't call me Richard, though, which is a little
she
weird.
She did.
You know who calls me that?
Your mother?
Yes. My mother, who is the same age as?
Tim's mother.
And?
Mary Tyler Moore.
Yes, who he is?
Hot.
There you go. You have answered every single one. That's like a Rick's Neuroses Mad Libs right there, and you just answered every single question correctly. So, no, I just threw out that little knowing is half the battle, and then she not only nailed it, it was G.I. Joe, but she knew that it came on after He-Man. God love her. God love her. All right, 503-733-2970. Coming up, bottom of the hour, Jim Roop. 2 o'clock, Peter Carlin will be in the studio with us. More from Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth, a suburban perspective. We should break. When we come back, special guest joining us in the studio. The first in-studio guest from the AM 970 Studios East when we return. It's 503-733-2970. You can also email us at brick@rickemerson.com. Back after this. Don't go anywhere. Radio program. This is the news with their hit single, whatever. Who is this?
Jerk.
I'm not. I'm listening
this
to the...
It's very frustrating. This is the Mountain Goats.
Somebody's asking for Mr. Fist. the Mountain Goats. I was busy talking to Clyde, and then you were lambasting me for not listening to the song. I put in my headphones to listen to the song, and then you yell at me for not listening to Clyde. What do you want from me? I think the stress of the move is affecting us all today. Hello, it's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-2970. Thank you for coming by. Coming up later on, CNN Radio correspondent Jim Roop, Scotty J with the Suburban Perspective, Peter Carlin later on as well. It is that time. Let's welcome now our first in-studio guest here at the new AM 970 Southern State Radio Studios East. From ClydeLewis.com and the Ground Zero Lounge at Dante's, it is Clyde Lewis. Hello, sir.
Hey, it's Green Diggs.
Love it. Yeah, isn't this cool?
Yeah, they're hot. They're awesome. It's like it's downstairs, too, which is even better.
It's downstairs. It's under. And, I mean, it is underground. When they say this is a dungeon, I mean, we are in a subterranean broadcasting.
But it's a
bunker.
Nice, dark. You could have candles in here. It'd be awesome.
And the we've got a skull there. And then the great thing, I don't know if you can really see this where you are, but there, I didn't even see when I first came in, is this great backlit logo that they've created. It's like a cool steel looking logo that
awesome.
They've created.
Yeah,
it's fantastic.
Really,
and we have Ryan and Bridget to thank for that. So,
and that nice wet bar over there is pretty cool too.
And the Viso fridge, which is not here now, but which is going to be here.
Sure.
I would like to remind again, in case they were not privy to this information, I'd like to remind the people of Quiznos that I stole one of your stools, and Clyde is sitting on it now. It's stolen. Stolen property? I have it. So before we do anything else, Clyde Lewis, you are here. We'll visit the Ministry of Truth here in just a skosh. But so you got to know about this thing, and you know Clyde. Now you know that I am what you would call a cynic, but what I would call a skeptic.
Well, you know, when you say a skeptic, because you're open, right? You're open to anything. Right?
I'm saying
because
that
skeptics who aren't open to anything are not skeptics. They're a-holes. That's what they are.
Well, okay. I don't really know.
But what I'm saying is that they are really the type of people who say, "Well, I'm skeptical," but you try and tell them something, and they look at you and they go, "Well, it's not true." You know, facts. No, it's not. Yeah, leave something open. So you're a skeptic. You're open, right?
Well, I'm saying that I believe in science. I'm saying I believe in the proof.
Well, I believe in science too.
Well,
but that doesn't make me.
I'm just saying that unlike our president, I believe in things that have been proven in a laboratory. I do not believe in things that like you think you saw, but that you can't prove. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
There is the George W. Bush way of thinking. There is the me and people like me way of thinking. And so I'm just saying that's the side I fall down on. Okay. I believe in the quarks and particles and, you know, whatever.
You don't believe in a transcendent life. You don't believe in life after death. You don't believe in the.
I believe that there's no proof of that stuff.
Well, there's no proof of any of it. No, that's the whole brilliance.
That's what
I'm
saying. So, but I'm saying, but by the same token, I am not an atheist. A lot of people think that I'm an atheist, and there is. I do have a point to this story, by the way. But as you're saying, that I'm. It's not that I refuse to believe in a lot of stuff, but that I reserve judgment on a lot of things. Because as I've said, I ought to rent myself out as some sort of ghost be gone, because whenever I'm around, nothing happens. That's the thing. Everybody I know, and this is true, by the way, in this room right now, I am literally, Sarah's here, Tim is here, Clyde, you are here. I am the one person in this room that has never had, to my knowledge, and I would admit it had it happened. You know that. You know that I am honest and I would admit it. I am the one person in this room that, to my knowledge, has never had what I would call a paranormal, a ghostly, whatever would you experience, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
The generally accepted sense of that. I know everybody else in this room has, and I haven't. And it's, you know, you've done radio programs where it's like, whatever, the glass moved, you floated above the ground, or a short woman fell out of, you know, clutching a blonde girl covered in ectoplasm or whatever. And it's just, but whenever I'm around, that stuff doesn't happen. So I feel like I must have I'm some like deep woods off for ghosts, because if you put me in a room, none of that stuff will take place. As soon as I leave, the frog dances. When I'm around, the frog just sits there and goes, brrr. So, anyway, so my point is that I'm not an atheist. I'm more of an agnostic about God and about a lot of other things. I'll kind of believe it when I see it, and until then, I don't really know. That being said, I got a call from Sarah this weekend. Sarah was, and we'll be kind of vague on the details here. Everybody else just goes poking around and goes looking at whatever the thing we're about to talk about. But Sarah, this weekend, had come in for a microphone test, because we're in the new studio. And she comes in, and she was looking all kind of dolled up, and I said, "Well, what's up with you? Where you got to, like, it's like the afternoon, like you got a party or a date or something?" She's like, "Well, no, I'm going to go hang out at this mausoleum," which is a thing you don't.
You make me sound creepy.
No, and she'd said it on the
actually,
phone,
it's kinda
too.
Hot, really.
It is kind of hot. And she'd said it on the phone. She'd call me. She's like, "How long is this mic test going to take? Because I got to go to a mausoleum." And I was sort of tapping my phone, like, I wonder what she really said. But she's like, "Yeah, I got to go. I'm going to go hang out at this mausoleum and read a book."
I just wanted to explore.
Well, which is fine. No, I mean, I used to hang out. Look, I got to tell you, and I think I don't think this is just me. The number of hours of my life I spent hanging out in cemeteries with girls, because here's the thing, and here's another thing. I know that we're inside a thought, inside a thought, inside a thought here, but there is a certain there's a certain niche of girls who find cemeteries really hot, and I don't know why that is. And you know that what I'm saying is true, Clyde. You know that there are a lot of chicks who find cemeteries to be a big turn on.
I know,
and
especially going in there in the dark,
which is fine. I mean, I don't have any problem with that, but it is kind of weird when you think about it. You know what I mean? Kind of a whole Harold and Maude kind of a thing.
Sure.
Anyway, so Sarah tells me, she's like, "Well, I'm going to go hang out at this mausoleum," and I'm like, "Oh, yeah, all right, whatever." So we do the mic test. Sarah goes off to hang out at the mausoleum, and I go off to eat corn chips or whatever the hell I was doing. I get this phone call. Oh, I had just come out of a Coffee People, one of the few remaining Coffee Peoples, where I had purchased both a peanut butter cookie and a pizza bagel.
Oh, boy.
And so I'm there, and I'm eating my pizza bagel and whatever, and the phone rings, and it's Sarah. And she's like, "Okay, I was just at the mall. Well, why don't you tell the story?"
Well, I was just kind of freaked out. It was really weird.
This
so,
is this Saturday that this happened. This last Saturday.
Yeah, I went. No, it was actually
it was
Sunday.
This last Sunday, actually, it was yesterday.
Yeah. Okay. So I went there, and I brought my camera with me, and so I started. You know, it's this older mausoleum. It has like tombs and like all kinds of stuff, and it's really fascinating to look at. So I was going through and taking all these pictures, and last time I was there, I found this one room that has this spiral staircase, and it has like a black and white checkered floor, and the walls are really weird looking, like it's, you know, these really high walls with stained glass up on the top, just really pretty. So I went into this room. I finally found it. I'd wandered around for a while. Went into this room, and I had my camera, and I started taking a couple pictures of it at the base of the staircase. And so I'm like, "Oh, I'm going to try, I'm going to go upstairs and get some pictures of the stained glass and stuff." So I'm walking up the stairs, have my camera in my hand, not taking a picture or anything, you know, just at the straightaway up the stairs, have it in my hand. My camera flies out of my hand, literally, like someone pushed it out of my hand. Flies over the balcony and smashes into pieces at the base of the stairs.
And so this is the phone call I get from Sarah today. She's like, she called me 30 seconds after that. So I was just at the mausoleum, and the phone flew out of my, or the camera flew out of my hands and smashed itself. And Sarah's not a nutcase. She's not like any number of people that we know who are crazy, who just, you know, just sort of, you know, just fabricate stuff.
Were you taking pictures of names? Were you taking pictures of names?
I was taking a picture of this stained glass window that had somebody's name on it. But I didn't take the picture yet because I was walking.
But you had
upstairs.
No, you weren't taking pictures of any of the tombstones or any of the names on the tombstones, or in the what you call.
Well,
them,
not anymore.
The crypt.
I think I did. Well, I was taking a lot of like faraway pictures.
Okay, somebody didn't like the fact that you were basically.
It was kind of weird because if I would have dropped the camera, I was walking, you know, straight up the stairs. If I would have dropped it would have fallen straight ahead of me. But it flew out of my hands and smashed on the ground. So it's complete. Yeah, my $200 camera gone.
So she called me. She's like, "I'm not going back." She's like, "I get all dressed up and I'm just gonna go home. I can't go back." So now, but see, now the irony is, of course, now I want to go. Now I want to go there because I want to see the place where the camera flew out of Sarah's hand and where she was being
aged
by specters.
Well, I just wanted to do it to see if I could, like, wander around and, you know, be in the place that creepy by myself. And
it's too bad.
I can't.
It's too bad you didn't get any of those pictures developed because you see if maybe there was
I do
image.
Have my memory card still. I mean, yeah, the camera's completely broken. And
will it be
well, but if you got the memory card, you could put in another camera,
yeah,
right?
If I get the memory card, I can go to, like, Walgreens and...
Yeah, you could totally do that. Well,
maybe
I want to see
got
what,
some images or
yeah,
something.
I want to see the photos you took.
Okay,
so.
Maybe I'll do that today.
Photos or something.
We're here with Clyde Lewis. We'll talk more about the happenings in the Ground Zero world in a moment. We've got some calls here, but ladies and gentlemen from Los Angeles, let's now welcome CNN radio correspondent extraordinaire, a man, a legend, Jim Roof! On the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Woohoo! I'm pretty creeped out right now.
Are you joshing?
No, I believe that happened to Sarah.
See, and that's the thing is, like, and I don't mean to be rude about this, but I know a lot of crazy people I know a lot of people who ought to be medicated and locked up in that order. Sarah's not one of those people, and Sarah's not a person who would just make crap up if it hadn't happened. And the fact that she called me, like, 30 seconds after this, now, I'm not saying that, I'm not saying that it was something paranormal, but I do believe that her account of it is how it actually happened. So that carries a lot more weight with me than, you know, some nutcase caller to a radio show at 2 a.m. going, "And I saw a ghostly white light." And, you know, somebody who's crouching in their basement with their head covered by a melon rind. You know what I mean? That's just, so, anyway.
I just believe a lot of things are possible.
Have you ever had an experience that you would describe as maybe not paranormal, but maybe something that you can't explain?
No, I don't think so.
All right, see, that's what I'm saying. See, people like Jim Roop and I...
You and Jim Roop seem like you're the same people.
That's what I'm saying. Jim Roop and I, you know what it is? We're cut from the same cloth. We walk tall with a square jaw and an iron chin and a straight shot of whiskey in this mixed-up crazy world looking for
dance. We are Matt Dillon.
That's what I'm saying. So these things never happen to us. So, and I'm the guy that always wants them, right? I'm the guy that wants to see the cool, weird, freaky thing that I can't explain or to have the exciting experience. But then it's like spooks or specters or demons or ghosts. Or they just see me and they just walk the other way and they go look for some drunken farmer in Wichita.
So, yeah, I can't be hypnotized either.
See, that's...
You know how people try to do that, you know, and I sit there and go... You're not going to take over my brain, dude. I'm not going to act like a chicken or anything else.
That's what I'm saying.
And all the people in the row I'm sitting in are all barking and crap like that. I'm just sitting there going, what in the world is going on?
But I'm talking
and I really try.
You know what it is?
I try and do what the guy says. Relax. Clear your mind. You know,
it's because our minds are too highly trained. Our minds are too they're too strong.
They're just way too empty.
Yeah, the Jedi mind thing doesn't work on us. Hey, am I supposed to be asking you about Ronnie Spector?
No.
All right, Scotty just typed it on the screen for no readily apparent reason. Then thanks, Scotty, I appreciate that. Way to keep the show on track.
No, there's nothing with Ronnie Spector that I know of.
All right, let's talk.
The SAG Awards were yesterday.
Okay, well, let's talk about that in just a moment. But let me ask you this: wasn't Phil Spector arrested for something like 20 years ago? Is that trial ever going to happen?
No, I don't know. It's being delayed again. So I think next month, I think February is when he's due back in court.
Let me just tell you this now: murder is wrong. And it's not a thing that here on the radio I would advocate. That would be improper of me. I'm simply saying, if I was going to kill somebody, I'd be coming to your state to do it, because I get the feeling you could kill somebody in California, and the odds are like 1 in 3 that you'll ever get to do it. You'll be dead before the trial ever happens. I mean, that's...
Especially if you're wacky.
Yeah.
If you're wacky, man, they'll just keep delaying the trial.
Seriously?
You got to be wacky.
I mean, well, the mission accomplished with Phil Spector. Has he still got that crazy Ludwig von Beethoven hair?
Yes, he does.
I want it.
Still looks like he was testing car batteries with his tongue.
Seriously, he looks like a poor man's Yahoo Sirius hair, just all sticking out straight and whatnot. God love him. I mean, for still having his hair, I guess. It's just a rather perplexed. But so.
I'm not sure it's his hair.
Well, why? If it was fake hair, why would you have, like, troll doll hair put on your head? If you're going to go to the trouble to buy real hair, why would you have. Why would you do that to
it? It's a statement against the man.
Okay.
You know, he's going to go looking like Bozo the Clown to the Bozo courtroom.
Now, is it...
You know, he's always yelling crap like that.
Why again the delay? Is there a shrink somewhere that is claiming that he's not fit?
No, it's just the lawyers are really smart. Just there's discovery issues, there's witness issues, there's all kinds of reasons for the trial to be delayed, and it just continues to happen. I mean, there was a couple of times when it was a court issue, but most of the time he's got pretty good lawyers with him.
Man, okay. Well, you know, I mean, I guess I'll always have something to talk about. You know,
a good lawyer can delay a trial because the laundry's not done. You know.
Yeah.
So if you have a lawyer with any smarts, he can delay your trial forever.
Well, fantastic. I mean, that's true, David. I'll always have Phil Spector. I'll always have that to fall back on. The Screen Actors Guild, I can never tell when I'm reading something that is just puffery and when I'm reading something that's real and true. Right here it says, the Screen Actors Guild Award is voted on only by actors and is considered to be an enormous honor by the guild membership. Now, is that true or is that just some crap that they sent to CNN that CNN just passed along to me without really clarifying?
That's something that the Screen Actors Guild puts out.
All right. Let's ask Tim Riley.
That's straight off the press release from the Screen Actors Guild.
Tim,
that's their boilerplate on their letterhead, I think. Actors do love getting pats on the back, and when they get a pat on the back from their peers, it's even better.
Tim Riley, member of the Screen Actors Guild.
I'm an honorable withdrawal.
I'm sorry. Up until recently.
Last 5 years.
I'm SAG eligible.
Now, is that because of your participation in, among other things, the hit thriller Freeway with Richard Belzer?
Yeah, among other things.
Which, by the way, I've been unable to locate. I've tried.
I can't find it either. I tried to. I used to have an old VHS copy that I taped off of television, but I didn't. Off of HBO or something.
Excellent.
I can't even find that.
Was Mary Tyler Moore at this? First of all, were you at this thing?
Yeah.
Okay, was Mary Tyler Moore there?
Yes.
Okay.
So was Cloris Leachman, so was Ed Asner, so was everybody.
Cloris Leachman, man, you want to talk about a woman that is just, she's looked like she's older than dust since she was about 25 years old. That's like a Steve Martin, that's like the Steve Martin Award for instant old. I mean, I don't, has she, did Cloris Leachman, I mean, no knock on her, she's a gifted actress, she's made a lot of, you know, a lot of defining roles in her life. But
she looks exactly the same as she did in Young Frankenstein.
Exactly. He was my boyfriend. Has she? Okay.
Aren't we great?
We're all dudes.
That's why we're SAG eligible.
Was she ever hot, Cloris Leachman, ever?
No. Maybe. I have no idea.
Fantastic. No. The official scene.
I mean, you know how you can look at somebody and think, okay, 10 years earlier, nah. 20, nah. Still got that face.
She's got a butter face.
Let's,
hot body, butter face.
Boy, but you know what? Let me just say this, though. Speaking of Young Frankenstein, that was on television, that was on AMC like it is about every 4 hours the other night. And I mean, you want to talk about a woman who at one point was an absolute perfect 10 was Terry Garr in that movie.
Oh, yes.
I mean,
yes.
Terry Garr in Young Frankenstein. I mean, I don't really know who a 10 is. I mean, but I mean, if she in that movie isn't a 10, I mean, let's just right now, let's figure this out once and for all. In terms of somebody at whatever age, whatever time, whatever movie, whatever era, a perfect 10. I mean, who leaps to mind? Clyde Lewis, perfect 10?
A perfect 10 in a movie?
Yeah, I mean, an actress you can think of now or in years past.
Well,
who is a perfect 10?
Now I got Terry Garr in my mind. I don't know.
Cloris Leachman is 81 years old.
Really?
She is?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Is she still...
She was Miss Chicago of 1946.
Really?
Yeah.
Was there a picture of her as Miss Chicago?
So she was a hottie then, at one time.
No.
Plus it was right after the fire.
Yes.
She was the cow that kicked over the...
She kicked over the lantern. You and I were going for exactly the same joke there. All right. Anyway, so was Mary Tyler Moore still reasonably attractive?
Yeah, you know, she had some work done, it looks like, but she looked okay to me. I mean, I didn't look anywhere near as old as I thought she would.
We had this disturbing revelation earlier today that Mary Tyler Moore, who I really openly lust after, is exactly the same age as my mother, which is, that's the sort of thing that'll just kind of creep into your head and give you lots of weird thoughts. You don't want to think about that very much. But I mean, she...
Let's go back to Terry Garr.
Yeah, I thought Elizabeth Montgomery was hot and Bewitched.
But not a 10, though.
She was a 10. Go back. She was hot.
Elizabeth
Montgomery was hot.
I don't dispute that she was hot.
Maureen McCormick was always hot in Brady Bunch.
Not a 10.
No, she wasn't 10?
No.
Oh, come on.
I mean, look, I...
When she was 18?
I'm not like I would be able to pull any of these women in real life anyway, but I'm just saying, if we are going to talk about the classic 1 to 10, I really didn't want to get into a whole thing about this, but if we wanted to talk about the classic 10 scale, Elizabeth Montgomery has kind of a pointy nose. Her nose comes to a kind of a sharp point.
Okay.
Well, I'm not saying she's not hot. I'm not saying she's not like an 8 or a 9.
Okay.
I'm just saying...
But you're right. Terry Garr has every feature perfect.
Terry Garr, and again, now I can only picture her in Young Frankenstein, but I mean... was for that one brief window of time, a woman without flaws.
She was hot in Tootsie. Remember in Tootsie? She was...
I suppose she was hot in Tootsie. She was like 10 years older, though.
She was hot in Mr. Mom.
She was hot in Mr. Mom, and she was kind of MILF hot. She was sort of suburban hot.
She wasn't in Close Encounters, though. I didn't think she was hot in Close Encounters.
Nah. They kind of grubbied her up.
Yeah. They didn't look good at all.
Well,
yeah,
anyway.
I didn't hold it.
Well, Mary Tyler Moore, though, in her prime, she was scorching. I mean, and here's the thing about Mary Tyler Moore is you and I talked last week about the difference between pretty and beautiful and whatever. But the thing about Mary Tyler Moore is, and I swear to God, she's one of those women that people don't really think of as sexy until you go back and just look at her or watch that show. The thing about Mary Tyler Moore is that beyond being attractive physically or whatever, she is sexy. She had a sexy vibe to her. And that's the thing you can't learn, you can't be taught. That's the thing one either has or one does not have, and she had it in spades. If you could bottle that and sell that, I don't know what it is, man. There's a certain something about her. This whole thing is just a big excuse for me to be creepy about Mary Tyler Moore, isn't it?
Well, okay. You got to start a church.
All right.
The Virgin Mary.
Any other interesting moments from the SAG Award last night?
Nothing interesting at the SAGs ever.
Helen Mirren's hot. Was Helen Mirren there?
The queen?
Yeah, she is. You
isn't
know,
she a babe?
I'm surprised how firm she is.
She
obviously works out.
She is hot. I saw her on...
she's got some crow's feet going on there, but she's...
Firm.
She doesn't look...
60.
She doesn't look her age. She looks very good.
I was unclear about who Helen Mirren is, but somebody clarified it for me. First of all, apparently as a younger actress, Helen Mirren appeared nude a great deal. And then also, this is where I will know her from. She was Harrison Ford's wife in The Mosquito Coast, where I do remember her being very attractive. It's a great movie. She was Harrison Ford's wife in The Mosquito Coast. And that is why, because she's one of those women that I sort of knew, but I didn't know where I knew her from. So you're saying she holds up close?
Yeah, I was very surprised. That struck me first at the Golden Globes. I went, wow.
Excellent.
You know, and then last night again, it was, ooh, man, that's real.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. All right. All right, brother man.
You start looking for, you know, props or wires or something. What's holding that up? She's holding herself up.
Excellent. Well, I'm unashamed. You know, as soon as anything on me starts to sag or get pocky or whatever, I'm going to go in. I mean, I got no qualms about plastic surgery. Whatever's going to keep me from looking hideous.
It's too late for me.
Yeah. It is too late for me. All right, brother man.
They say no plastic surgery. We use clay on you. It's fine.
Just spackle. Enjoy your Southern California afternoon, my brother. We'll talk to you soon. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. CNN radio correspondent Jim Rubin, Los Angeles. How great is that guy? All right. Scotty J. Manning, the phones that are the offices down the street. A little bit of if you're not imagining that, by the way, if you think there's a little lag on the phones, that's as we're in the new studios, there's going to be some issues that we are dealing with. Clyde Lewis from studio with us. We'll go back to the Ministry of Truth here in just a short while. Sarah Dillon in studio as well. Peter Carlin for the Oregonian going to join us. Oh, we have some calls here we should get to. Is this Terry? Is that Terry? We'll get Terry, and then we got Jerry and Chuck and blah, blah, blah. Is Terry still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, Terry, what's up, sir?
Hey, this isn't why I called, but boy, you know, Jim Roop and Lisa Goddard, you couldn't hear them when you're on hold at all, but you can hear everything that you're doing.
Well, that's what matters.
The sniffing, the way you're trying to break in, and do the conversation, and it's hilarious.
Well, that's really the
anyway,
important...
You can't hear anything on the phone, so I don't know if somebody said anything to you or not, but that's what's going on.
That's the important part, as long as you're able to hear me. That's what matters.
You can hear you. Every little teeny thing that you did,
that's
you can
all
hear.
That's all that's needed.
actually, what I wanted to do... why I was calling, the reason. I will give you $40 if you will quit talking to yourself in the third person.
I think that's a great idea.
$40?
Well, hold on.
Do I hear 50?
I was going to say.
I'm going to put this out to your listeners. I think that there should be a new game. That every time that you talk about yourself in the third person, then you have to put into a pot. I will start the pot at $40. And then the money that we raise either can go to a charity or to a listener party or something like that. Because we have to break you of this habit. You're driving me insane. I'm a letter carrier. I listen to you every day. You're driving me nuts.
I'm confused. I swear to God, this phone call started out that you were going to give me $40, and now it's that I've got to give $40 to, like, kids somewhere.
No, no, no. I'm saying the listeners, every time they bust you.
So
we should be able to bust you.
So
and you should have to pay.
Oh, this is like a swear jar. This is like a swear jar like we had
exactly.
at the Bigger Than Jesus rehearsals. There was this swear jar, and every time somebody, but it wasn't a swear, it was like it was whenever somebody would interrupt or get off topic or disrupt rehearsal or whatever, it was like how your mom used to make you pay a quarter whenever you said the S word or something.
Right.
We would have to put a dollar. So you're saying that I would have to put money in it. Where's the incentive for me here? Where's the upside to Rick Emerson for this?
Well, then you won't have to put, you won't be doing it so much because you won't want to, you're cheap. You won't be wanting to put money in there, so you'll quit doing it. It'll break you of your habit.
I'm saying Rick Emerson doesn't necessarily think that's a habit that needs to be broken. Okay.
Come on.
All right, and we're done. Okay, thank you, Terry. That's Terry and Tiger. There you go, thank you. Moments of my life I'll never get back. It's 503-733-2970. Let's see, Jerry, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir. Jerry!
Jerry!
Jerry! Jerry!
Hello, Rick.
Hi, what's up?
Okay, yeah, how about for Perfect Tens in a movie? A long time ago, Angelina Jolie did a little indie flick called Foxfire, was made here in Portland.
That movie's awesome.
Okay, let's stop here for a second. Foxfire, not Firefox with Clint Eastwood?
No, sir, Foxfire.
Foxfire is a group of girls. Okay, I'll let you tell it. Go ahead.
Thank you. Well, it was just a little indie flick that I got kind of dragged into because my sister and my daughter wanted to go see it, and I have forgotten everyone else from the movie except for Angelina Jolie. She was so minor back then. Her name in the movie was Legs. That was it. And she was stunning in the movie. Now she's looking a little, I don't know what, but she was just stunning then, gorgeous, unspoiled and fresh.
And so what is the, I don't know, the gist of the movie. What is this? If you had to describe it in like 2-3 sentences.
Problems girls go through growing up in a little backwoods town like Portland, Oregon.
All right, excellent. And so Sarah, you've seen this?
I have.
Is she
I saw it a long time ago. Oh, you'd love her.
Because I didn't know, like everybody else, I didn't know that she did anything but the Big Girl Interrupted. I didn't know she did anything.
No, because I was a fan of hers because she did Hackers, too.
Oh, my God, that's right.
Uh-huh.
I forgot about that. Oh, damn. All right. Okay. Foxfire. All right. I am making a note of that.
It says it took 17 years to learn the rules and only 1 week to break them all.
I think there are a couple lesbian scenes in it, too.
Is there a hot lesbian action, sir?
I think so.
Kind of. There is a very hot let's tattoo ourselves to commemorate this, but the shirts had to come off to do the tattoos. I didn't understand why, but I said nothing.
No, you just embrace it. You just wrote. Excellent. All right. That'll be this weekend's rental. All right.
Oh.
Thank you, sir.
There you go.
All right. There you go. That's it, Jerry. Thank you. All right. Fantastic. I'm all over that.
Yeah, I can't believe you haven't seen that. You would really like that movie.
I guess it's because every time, maybe people have mentioned it, but every time I see Foxfire, I think Firefox, which is the Clint Eastwood movie. And you don't think about, when's the last time anybody saw Firefox? Chuck, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, Chuck.
Hey, Rick, you were talking about Terry Garr.
No.
Have you ever seen the original Star Trek episode that she played a secretary at NASA? She must have been about 19 or 20 years old.
Clyde?
I don't remember that. What one was it? What's Star Trek?
It was the one where the alien came back to Earth in a time warp as a Siamese cat, and he was trying to mess up the Apollo program. And Terry Garr played a secretary in a NASA office.
Did Kirk get her?
Huh?
Did Kirk hit that?
Did he hit it? Did he punch it?
Did he beat it savagely?
I think he probably did.
Did he teach it who was boss?
Right. She wasn't green or anything, so.
Yeah, no, Kirk.
Well, it shouldn't have to be green.
Kirk doesn't like his women. He doesn't like his women flesh color.
Just needs a heartbeat. That's
no
all.
No extra appendages or anything that I remember. She was just played a human secretary, kind of ditzy. But actually, I think she got prettier.
Did she take
Frankenstein was her epoch, I think.
Secretary. Did she take Kirk's dictation?
No, but I think her manager was...
He's right there.
It was a weird one.
I caught that. All right. Thank you, Chuck.
Thank you.
And he's gone. Oh, come on. It was right. Like
was
you were
like wide open, beautiful.
The low-hanging fruit.
It was the low-hanging
fruit. My lips are all chapped.
Is Scotty just hanging up on people the second he thinks you're done talking?
I told Scotty in radio, there is this phrase, there's a little bit of a radio lingo called an out cue. And an out cue is for the people. And an out cue is the final line of something. That indicates that item is done. So a commercial will have an out cue, like blah 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 blah. Call for more details. And so the commercial, like when you're playing it off a cart or maybe even out on the computer, it'll say out cue, quote, call for more details. So when you hear those words, that's when you know it's done. So because Scotty is having to pick up and hang up the phone today, I mean I can talk to people. Sarah can kind of control the levels a little bit, but as far as like this, here's the sound. This right here, that's my phone. Now, I'm picking it up because it's not plugged into anything.
Why can't you just have the LQB for all your telephoning needs?
I'm holding the phone in my hand, but it's not plugged in. The phone is still back at the coin tower. So Scotty is having to pick up the calls. Like when I say, let's start the Chuck, he punches the button and we talk to Chuck. When I say, and I told him, I said, hey, just so you know, my out cue, so to indicate that the call is done, as I say, thanks for calling. And I, you know, which is then you gradually pop the phone down, you turn it down, and you end the phone call, whatever. But he, of course, is just lightning quick. He's just the hair trigger over there. So I'm like, thank you for the call. Bam! And I can just hear him hitting the drop button and hanging up on the four callers.
Loving it.
All right, we should take a break.
Well, we got to take one more call. We'll take one more call here. We'll finish out this segment of chicks who used to be hot before they became scabrous. And then we'll break. We'll come back. Headlines from Tim. Clyde Lewis here. Peter Carlin, Suburban Perspective. That's all coming up. Paul, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. What's up?
Hey, Rick, how you doing?
I'm fine, Paul. What's up?
Are you there?
Hello? Yes, hello.
Okay, I can barely hear you. Okay, we're still working with these phone issues. Are you still there?
Are you screwing with me?
I cannot hear you at all.
Hello.
Hello.
Okay, I hear you now. Okay, you're talking about when possibly when Clarice Leachman may have been kind of hot?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go back to the film called The Last Picture Show. Way back in 1971, about 36 years ago, if I'm not mistaken, in that film she seduces Timothy Bottoms.
I don't remember her being in The Last. I need to see that movie again. I've only seen that once, and it was a long time ago.
Oh, yeah. She was widowed, and she was lonely, and Timothy Bottoms was there, and things just happened. But, yeah, she was in it.
Okay, there you go. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
That's all. There you go. See, before he even hang up, Scotty, bam, on the cutoff button.
So I think of erotic is Clarice Leachman and Timothy Bottoms. Don't you? I think that.
Timothy Bottoms, but only when he's feeling naughty. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. We come back. We'll talk headlights. Also, Peter Carlin, Clyde Lewis, Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth, Scotty J with the Suburban Perspective, like us at 3, Donna Mike at 7. Here's the Drive-By Truckers on the Rick Emerson Show.